Hello, I'm Hashi Mohammed, contributing editor at Tortoise Media. Welcome to this, the fourth in our series of podcasts on economic clusters hosted by the CBI in partnership with Virgin Media O2 Business. Over this series, we've talked about the role of clusters, the importance of skills, and the importance of innovation and collaboration. Today, we're in Liverpool, discussing how the UK can leverage the strength of London's finance sector and the importance of local and regional sources of finance. I'm joined by Rachel Shatliff, Managing Director of Business Banking for the North Region at HSBC, and Simon Robson, Managing Partner at Northeast Capital. Simon, starting with you, having just had that discussion around the role of clusters and access to finance, we're here at Liverpool John Moores University. What were your reflections of what you've just heard this afternoon?
Well, that at one level, there appears to be plenty of funding available, but that was largely from the angle of a British business bank, which is the sort of mega fund that's trying to do everything in order to fill gaps that exist from seed capital or startup capital right the way to scale-up capital, which is my business's area of interest. But also, on the other hand, from other members of the room, clear evidence of a lack of funding being available. And I think the division between the two was public sector versus private sector. You know, there is still quite a lot of public sector money available, but actually a lot of that public sector money requires private sector to lead it. And that is, in our experience at Northeast Capital, that is something that still, you know, is a yawning gap, or what used to be called the Valley of Death. So very interesting to hear both sides of the argument as to whether or not there is or isn't capital available.
And Rachel, what were your reflections just hearing those contributions today?
The take I had was that actually the funding is there and there is appetite for it, and it's about bringing it together and educating the entrepreneurs where to go, who to connect with, and then really shouting about the successes when we've got them so that other people learn and we can have sort of continued rolling success. And perhaps we're based in Liverpool today. Is Liverpool an area that would really benefit from shouting more loudly? There's some great success stories, but are there people out there that want to shout about them? So how can we enable that? And I think all of us around the room felt we had some kind of responsibility around supporting that.
You're quite right, Rachel. One of the things that did come out of that was about the lack of knowledge and the lack of understanding in terms of what money is available, what type of capital is available, how you access that capital. I mean, I wonder what you took away from that and how that might change the way you perceive this at HSBC or how you approach it in terms of raising more awareness.
I think there's always an opportunity to do more of that. So it reinforced to me the importance of making sure that all my relationship managers understand what's available on the ground, right across the board from the seed funding right through. And then really reaching out into the community and sharing that knowledge and encouraging our customers and the rest of the community. So there's definitely more that we can all do. We have some, you know, great funds available at HSBC for these entrepreneurs, but I think it's incumbent on us to understand the whole range of opportunities.
Simon, there is obviously that consensus that access to finance is quite important to providing the growth across the regions and nations. Now, one of the other challenges that came out of this, particularly for Liverpool, when compared to, say, for example, Manchester, was how we don't hear enough about the success stories. Manchester is really good at promoting itself and what it's done and how access to finance has made a difference. What is your sense of your perspective sitting in the Northeast, but also today sitting in Liverpool, about how we might then move the dial on that front?
Well, first of all, I agree that is a problem. I remember someone saying to me in the Northeast, you know, people don't like to shout about the success. And if you do, you stop getting invitations to dinner parties or to corporate hospitality because you become a bit big for your boots. Who do you think you are? But equally, I think if you're looking at the difference between Liverpool and Manchester, you know, Manchester was not dissimilar from Liverpool about 15 years ago. And then along came a fund that was actually managed by my predecessors, my business. There was a £32 million fund that was invested in by Manchester University and the Cooperative and the European Investment Fund. And it spent the following 10 to 15 years, which brings it pretty much bang up to last year, investing in businesses coming out of the university. And out of that came evidence of the commercial potential of some of the intellectual property that was being developed in that university. And that led to, for example, the Graphene Institute, which is now a national treasure. And so I think one of the things clear to me is that perhaps this is now Liverpool's time. I know it's trying to raise a seed fund. It was discussed in the meeting that, you know, if it can get that fund raised, then that might help it to, you know, to get that ball rolling, because, you know, money attracts money, money funds, it creates jobs. And indeed, Manchester discovered that its fund not only helped to stimulate external investment into the region, it also attracted businesses from outside the region into the region that were looking to grow, what we call spin-ins.
And what about the role of clusters in all of this? Because we've identified two main challenges around the lack of knowledge and information that's available, but also about sharing the success stories and getting the word out there. How much of a role does a cluster play in sort of meeting those two challenges with a view to helping more small, medium-sized enterprises do better quicker?
I think we're at relatively early stages of seeing that, but it can work really, really well, and it draws in further investment, doesn't it? So my previous role was working with multinationals investing into the UK, and you know, the vibe around Manchester was really strong, and they were really interested in how they draw into that and actually think outside London, which was always great to see. And it is self-perpetuating, and it absolutely can work, and it will draw in those micro businesses as well, and they, without a doubt, really benefit from seeing successful entrepreneurs. That's who they want to learn from. They don't want to come to banks and learn about it. They want to see other successful businesses and engage with them. So I think our role is just to help facilitate that and to sort of direct people.
Simon, one of the things I was really interested in was about how mindsets need to be shifted in order for us to get some companies growing and accessing finance. And one of the examples that came out that you had highlighted was about, for example, how some companies just don't want to entertain the possibility of selling equity in their businesses. They'd much rather focus on the more traditional ways of getting finance, i.e. loans. Can we shift that narrative and mindset in order to take this to the next level?
So clearly, raising equity is all about giving up a chunk of your business to third party, typically. And for some family businesses, that's a step too far, a bridge too far, because there's a sense of a loss of ownership. But in reality, the majority of investors in businesses, they want a minority stake. And if you're lucky enough to be a business that is capable of attracting equity finance, then you're in a pretty strong position actually to negotiate the nature on which that equity is invested. I mean, the investment agreement is where the real haggling begins. So assume valuation has been agreed and that this person or persons coming in are investing for a minority stake. You then get into all the business of, well, what, as the incoming investor, what are my voting rights and all this sort of stuff? So it's a process. And at any point, you know, a company can step away from that, you know, not forgetting that the reason the investor's there is because they believe in what you're trying to do. And you can haggle pretty hard, negotiate pretty hard on that score. Loans, obviously, a very different game, and that's not my area of expertise. But often you hear, and we heard today, the mention of how, you know, well, actually, some businesses are just quite happy being lifestyle businesses. You know, just leave them alone. They're quite happy doing what they do, and it's up to them to take that view. But that can have a knock-on impact on the region. And I know that a lot of these family businesses are very, very keen on supporting their local regions. They're a little bit like sort of Mittelstand businesses in Germany. They're often the biggest employer in their town, and they want to remain that way. And sometimes to remain that way, you have to invest even to stand still. There are cases where businesses ought to be looking to raise funds, sometimes just to stand still, and other times, obviously, it's not for them.
I think that's where you come back to the sort of the case studies, the examples, isn't it? You need family businesses to see other family businesses that have taken that step and actually it's worked well and it hasn't destroyed the legacy that they feel they need to continue. So I think the more storytelling we can do, the more narrative would be really, really helpful.
And innovative businesses like, for example, a company we've just raised a large number of millions of pounds for, completed it on Friday. You know, they're an innovative business. They are pre-profitability. They're at a high commercial risk stage of their development. And in order for them to be successful, the businesses around them, their supply chain, they've almost got to scale up alongside. Otherwise, they're going to be stymied. So it's about finding that balance, you know, in order to ensure that the supply chain to the fast-growing innovative businesses can meet the demand of the growth.
We know that, for example, the City of London is a classic example of a place that has that financial might to be able to do significant things with that capital and with that legacy. I mean, how do we move that kind of attitude into the regions successfully for the long-term approach using the clusters? Because that's an example of something that has worked, and Liverpool isn't poor in terms of what it's capable of, but how does that work to the next level?
Well, it's very hard to create a cluster. A cluster usually forms around an anchor company, take Nissan, for example, and other automotive or transport-related manufacturers.
It's quite organic as well.
It's a very organic process. You can't force it. You can encourage it, of course, and local government should take a big part in that sort of events-led activity in order to get these businesses talking to each other, creating platforms and all the software platforms, all these sort of things that can be done very quickly and relatively cheaply. Having created those clusters, that's very attractive to the city because, for example, the business we've just raised money for, the questions they kept asking this business was, well, talk me through your supply chain. And we were able to turn around and say 80% of our supply chain to this business is within 20 miles of where it's based. So that was a real sell to the financial institution that was looking to invest. The other thing that I think will help to encourage city institutions to get into the regions is if they feel there is a safe pair of hands in the region. For example, you know, with our fund, Northeast Capital, we're trying to encourage, with our investment banking partner, financial institutions in the city to get into a fund. And then that fund will be a professionally managed form of access into businesses that are in the regions. Without that, I think there's always going to be the, oh, you know, it's 2 hours, it's 2.5 hours, or it's 4 hours, you know, to get there. And, you know, that problem.
I think the other aspect is to play to strength. So don't try and replicate what London does. Actually build on what we're good at locally and really promote that. Potentially things that you can't actually get in London. You know, the industrials, there's all sorts of interesting things happening right across the north, aren't they? Which we, again, if we shouted out more, then people would come and invest. So, yeah, don't try and cookie-cutter it. I think we've really established that doesn't work with the clusters. It's got to be much more organic.
And that's about the narrative of the local area. It's about their own particular leadership and anchor institutions. And that's what you mean, don't you, in terms of what that looks like, starting your own organic cluster.
Yeah, absolutely. And then telling that story. So they already exist, don't they? We've just got to build those up and have those ambassadors that are really talking about it as well.
And what about the sort of your experiences of working with HSBC and being a global bank and being from the region, being away for about 5 years and coming back? What has been your reflection in terms of what you've seen change in the region and how do you see that change sort of manifesting itself over the next few years?
I've seen growth in confidence, which is brilliant to see. And I've seen growth in recognition as well of, again, outside London, sort of expertise, the knowledge and the entrepreneurship of businesses outside of London and the South East. So that's been, you know, a delight to see. And being a Northerner, as you can tell by my accent, really powerful to see that even through the challenges of Brexit and the pandemic, you know, we continue to see entrepreneurs finding ways to develop, to grow, to think internationally, to spread out from the North, which is fantastic. So I can only see that growing and people finding ways around the, you know, whatever the economy brings to us for the next 6-12 months.
And Sam, one of the things that came out strongly as part of this discussion was about policy and central government policy in particular being quite consistent, being understandable, being digestible, and also crucially for investors, predictable. What were your thoughts on that aspect of it?
Policy is no doubt extremely important, and clarity and long-term plans. But we don't live, you know, this isn't Singapore. We're not a command economy. The people that go out there and make the money, the capitalists, the entrepreneurs, innovators, they're taking a myriad of risks. And no matter how governments forecast and pump prime and all those good things they're supposed to do and must do, you know, there's always risk that a government's going to change, or, you know, the person you just got to know who's the minister for whatever has, you know, has been moved on to be a minister of something else, you know. I mean, it's constant. So I'm not saying it's not absolutely crucial. I think where perhaps it's more, where it matters more, is to inward investors into the UK to see that sort of clarity. I'm not an inward investor into the UK. You know, I'm working with businesses that are entrepreneurial at a certain stage of the development in the UK. And, you know, despite all the uncertainty around at the moment, there is still money pouring into businesses. So it's just factored in. It's a pricing question. It's a risk question.
Your reflections on that as well, Rachel, about, you know, investment requires some stability. And if you're an investor, you want to be able to look at Britain as a place that is predictably investable. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, the more predictable, the better. But I think there is a recognition that with the open environment comes that level of change in the UK. So, yeah, dealing with overseas investors, as I did in my previous role, were they thrown a little bit by Brexit and the uncertainty around that, for example? Of course they were, but they can stand back and look at the wider opportunities and they really were started to think about what else there is, you know, the level of investment in the Northeast and what opportunities that might bring them in certain fields, and seen some great investments around sort of subsea cabling and all this kind of great stuff that's going on. So I think it just perhaps makes them more selective. You know, what are we really good at? Just as in the same way as what's the North good at, or what's the UK good at? And we'll invest in that, and we'll perhaps take the more vanilla stuff elsewhere.
I've seen some investors from overseas deciding that the UK looks a little bit vulnerable at the moment, and instead of seeing that as a risk, they're seeing it as an opportunity to fill
cheap.
A vacuum. Yeah, we're undervalued.
Really?
In some areas.
Even with the sort of political instability, people are thinking, actually, this is an opportunity for us to do something different.
Opportunity for financial return and also for political capital.
We were here today discussing access to finance to drive growth. Do you see that being an opportunity for a lot of the businesses to sort of get inward investment for that purpose?
Well, the businesses we deal with, that sort of money is likely to come in via a fund, because overseas investors rarely want to make, they do, but it's rare, direct investments into companies that, if you like, are pre-profitability. That's a very high risk thing. And often investors want to be very close to the investments if they're doing that directly. And so often they will go in through a fund. It's back to that idea of a professionally managed portfolio approach, de-risked approach. That's certainly the interaction we're having with those sorts of investors.
Yeah, whereas I guess we'd see sort of large multinationals looking at opportunities to pick up businesses in the UK and to either work as a JV or...
JV?
Joint venture, or pick up those businesses. So there's good opportunities for those entrepreneurs who want to move on to something else, potentially.
Yeah, in the Northeast, three electric vehicle supply chain businesses were acquired by a West Coast US special purpose vehicle because they believed they were undervalued. They also saw the opportunity of bringing them together and the advantages of if you like, bringing bits of the supply chain into a single entity, which makes sense.
And finally, two things, really. One was about the lessons that some regions could learn from others in terms of attracting the finance. What would you say is the advice that you would give in that kind of context of where we are today?
Simple messaging. So boil it down. What's your pixie dust? What's your magic? What's your differentiating factor? And not in a sort of paragraph. You know, get it down to a single sentence. And that is extremely hard to do. The Northeast, for example, is describing itself as the centre for industrial decarbonisation, full stop. And I think if the Northwest can find, and Liverpool, which is obviously where we are today, can find a way to define itself and have a very simple message, you know, that's equally good. The other thing I think is very important is, you know, the UK is small enough without us subdividing ourselves even smaller. Now, we have to a certain extent. In the Northwest, obviously, there's a Manchester-Liverpool divide, but it's part of the Northwest. And so if it's a total fantasy, the Northwest could find a way to define itself, you know, in a single sentence. Wow, you know, that could be really powerful.
Yeah, good point.
Rachel, what about your reflections on what would you say is the real way in which regions could learn from one another and really find ways of attracting that inward investment through finance?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It's about conveying that message, isn't it? Sticking to what you're good at and really making sure that everybody knows it. So life sciences is the obvious choice, isn't it? Everybody's trying to replicate Oxford and Cambridge, but, you know, what is it that we could really be known for in Liverpool, in the Northwest?
Rachel and Simon, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Great to spend time with you.
For our next Thinkin, we'll be in Birmingham, where we'll be discussing the importance of good leadership in driving regional and national growth. For more information on the CBI's cluster's work, including Thinkin write-ups, case studies, and the latest live learnings from their live learning demonstrator in Humber, please visit their digital platform at www.cbi.org.uk/cbi-clusters-playbook.